This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 427 of Shutters Inc.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
That there would be Mr. Glyn Lavender from creativephotoworkshops.com.au.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were saying hello to me.
Why would I do that? And I am Bruce Williams from Creative... Where am I from? Shutters Inc. Podcast. Shuttersincpodcast.com. I'll have nothing to do with him. Thank you very much.
Shutters in the Foot Podcast.
That's
foot
the
in
one.
Foot in the Mouth Podcast.
How have you been?
You know, pretty good. It's been. We did an episode last week, didn't we?
We did.
So it's been a whole week. And, you know, I've got to say.
We made your whole week.
This week. You didn't make my whole week. You made my day. You made my whole week. I was as serious short as a nana naps this week. I've been kind of running around. I mean, I played golf yesterday. That really ate into my nana nap time.
As golf will do.
I managed to get a little half hour nap before making dinner, but you know, it's still, I was a couple of hours down for the day in nana naps. And right. I was out all day today shooting and only managed, like, once again, about another half hour nana nap before dinner.
Right.
I'm down like 5 hours of nana naps just this week.
For the week.
At least.
How do you cope?
Oh, I'm not. That's the point I'm trying to make, Bruce. I'm not.
Mate, you need to play golf with me because you'd be able to get in a half-hour nana nap every time we're on the green.
You're that slow, are you?
I am. I'm shocking. My putting game is awful.
I was putting sensationally yesterday. I've got to say, I nailed a 25-footer that was just sublime.
Oh, sweet.
But before we started off, I've walked up to the little, you know, practice putting area, you know, the little green you get with all the holes. And first one, it's got about 8 feet straight in. And I said to the guy I'm playing with, I'm going home now. but my putting was really on yesterday.
Peaked early.
And my putting was really on. And we had this couple of old guys in front of us who were really funny, you know, because it was a slow round. So we're sort of chatting between holes. And they're at one hole. This guy's par three. This guy does a pretty good shot. It kind of kicks a bit off to the left. So he misses the green. He goes, oh, you know, it could be worse. I said, yeah, it could be your mate's shot he's about to take. I go straight into the water.
Oh, no.
Of course, he blamed me for. So, yeah, so a nice game of golf yesterday. And we got to the end of the round, and a couple of old guys were in front of us were at the cafe. And they said, how'd you go? I said, not bad, yeah. High 70s.
Yeah.
And there was silence. Yeah. High 70s. I said, yeah, for the back nine.
Yeah.
I'm one of those golfers who, for many years, I used to play twice a week with my dad.
Oh, right.
And got quite stressed. Yeah, the game frustrated the living daylights out of me.
Yep.
But then one day I had an epiphany, Bruce, an epiphany on the course.
Right.
Of course, I got kicked off that course. I had an epiphany that I'm playing golf with the wrong mindset.
Okay.
And as soon as I changed my mindset, golf became relaxing, fun, and I enjoyed myself much more.
Ah, okay.
And all I did was change to a cost per shot model of playing golf.
Right.
Yeah, if it cost you $40 for a round of golf and you have 120 shots, it's only 33 cents a shot.
Yep.
If you're going around in like 70, that's costing like $1.50 a shot. It's paying five times the price for their golf that I am.
Yep.
Per shot.
That's fair
as
enough.
As soon as I change that philosophy, tell you what, golf's been a blast. Yeah. Love no it. Longer does it a hole where you take 18 shots seem bad. It's like, there's value.
That's right. I like
sure, it. Sure, it's a par three. You got six times the value of the guy who got the par three, but still.
I like it.
All about your viewpoint, my friend.
That's it. Excellent.
So how's your week been? Has it been fabulous?
It's been wet.
Has it?
Yeah, it has been very wet up here. But other than that, no, just the usual stuff. As I mentioned to you just before we started recording, my Dark Table YouTube channel is going gangbusters. Yes.
You got three viewers now, do you say?
That's right. I'm very close to the monetization threshold, which after I surpass it will probably earn me a whole $5 a month. So, But there you go. So, but no, it's going well. People are loving
it. You've obviously found a thing that people are keen to develop.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they want to get out of the Adobe Adobe world.
Yep.
And so, yeah. Is there any other people out there doing that? Are they doing Dark Table YouTube?
Well, here's the thing. There are a few people. There's two or three people who are occasionally putting videos out.
Yeah.
But what inspired.
Key word right there.
Yes. Occasionally. Certainly not as regularly as I have been.
Well, they've probably got jobs, Bruce.
Probably. But what inspired me to start this in the first place was the fact that the other content that's being put out there is not very good. And I thought, you know what, I might only have a couple of years of experience with this, but I know I can do a damn sight better job of translating that information to a new user.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when it comes to nerd stuff, you're the man.
That's it.
Yeah. Or A-man.
Yeah. So it's been going really well and getting lots of positive feedback. I'm up around about 880 subscribers at the moment. So, it's kicking along.
Have you been reading the comments?
Yes, always. And
apparently not supposed to.
Well, I've not heard that. I've had it said that you should make it a point to interact with every interaction from your listeners
slash viewers.
Yeah. Well, so far it's all been very positive.
Cool.
You know, so yeah, so click on likes and I try and comment back when I can and yeah.
Well, you know, it's like anything with social media, if you respond and then they respond, it boosts, you know, who's going to view it.
Yeah, the interaction and all that sort of stuff. And I'm just about to launch another channel.
Really? Another one?
Yes.
What's this one?
Going back to audio.
Not quite so dark table.
That's right. Going back to audio-related content.
Really?
Yeah. So the digital audio workstation software that I use to put this podcast together and use for my day-to-day work, which is a platform called Reaper. I'm about to start a video training series on that, which will be a YouTube video series. And this is the first time I've spoken of that publicly. I haven't actually mentioned this anywhere elsewhere yet, so you heard it here first.
Yeah.
So that'll probably start in the next couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are the people wanting to listen to those things?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool.
Definitely.
That's the problem. So you're close to monetization on your other one. You can't kind of link them. So over your...
No.
Yeah, that's
no, each good. Channel is independent, so you've basically got to start from ground zero with the new channel and build up the, you know, the library of content and therefore the number of views and the number of subscribers, and the more likes you get, then the more likely it is that the YouTube algorithm will recommend your video to people searching for like topics. So, you know, it's all the usual stuff of making sure you've got the appropriate tags on videos so that, you know, they pop up in searches, you know, when people are searching for, you know, closely related stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's all that stuff to think about. So, yeah.
Cool.
So that's been my week.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I did a photo shoot today.
I've seen a few of the photos. I saw the one with with one foot up against the tree.
Yes. Well, this is a guy I've known for about 10 years, and he's a mime and a body comedy kind of guy, and does lots of theatrical stuff that's visual,
right,
and comedic. So yeah, what he does with his body is his own business, quite frankly. so the guy with his foot up against the tree, whilst it's a weird image and not something I would ever normally consider,
not the way you would normally pose your subjects.
Yeah, but it's kind of him.
Yeah,
you know, that's that, and the shoot was for him. It wasn't for me. I was doing him a favor.
Oh, okay. So he wanted some promo shots.
Yeah, he just wants some images. Some images. So I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, he's a mate." So you know, I needed a bit of a walk to get all the muscles from the golf loosened up again. Yeah. And so that was a bit of a fun day out. The day, you know, started out really nice. It was beautifully overcast and, you know, really good for dramatic cloud shots with flash. And then the damn thing blew away. There's nothing but blue skies. But it started out quite well. I don't know. I probably got four. We're going to do two. We're doing a rural and an urban shoot.
Oh, nice. So this was the rural one.
Oh, no, was it? Yeah. This is so the scene for those that remotely almost interested, where I shot these rural shots is actually a film location for Mad Max.
Is that right?
Movie Mad Max or Road Warrior for our American listeners.
Yeah, right.
Where there's a scene where Mad Max chains or handcuffs some guy to a car and then drives off and the car blows up.
Oh, no. Hang on. Stop. You need to – that's Kundalini. I know that guy. I know that guy. That is Paul
Scott.
That is Paul Johnson. And he is now a voice artist in Sydney.
Really?
And they just had, only this week, the 40th anniversary of the release of the movie Mad Max.
How funny is that?
It is a very small world. Yeah, so the scene is that Max's wife goes to the shop in her panel van with her child. She buys an ice cream, and the bikies come up, and the nasty. Yeah, it is.
Scene.
Oh, are you thinking about the bit right at the end of the movie? Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry.
What's the way through or something? Yes, we handcuffs the guy to a car.
Yes.
Drives off and it blows up.
That's right. And he hands him a hacksaw and he says, the fuel tank's going to blow in 3 minutes. It'll take you 2 to cut through your ankle and 5 to cut through the chain.
That's the one.
There.
So that's that location, which is
wow. So there you go.
So where I live, within half an hour, a lot of Mad Max was filmed within about half an hour where
is
I live.
Is that right? Wow.
There's locations from it all over the place.
Right.
One of the famous locations underneath Melbourne University.
Yeah.
Is the car park where he gets his interceptor car for the first time.
Yep.
The Halls of Power, or whatever it's called, is our Science Work Museum. There's all these locations.
Because they were just art students when they shot that.
Were they?
Well, I think Mel was. Okay. He was either still an art student or was just out of NIDA or something.
He was doing NIDA because he was out of NIDA.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Anyway,
there you go.
I'd like to dedicate this episode.
Oh, to who?
Well, not to George Georgiadis, obviously. That would be too easy. No, I want to call this the Ross Lowell edition.
Oh, okay. Who's Ross Lowell?
Ross Lowell is the godfather of all things photographic.
Oh.
Every photographer has used, every working photographer at some stage has bowed down to Ross Lowell and said, thank you for your invention.
Have they?
You've saved my life.
Right. What did he invent?
He invented gaffer tape.
Is that right?
So, yeah, he invented the gaffer tape, you know, and, every photographer worth their salt over the years, that's a staple in everyone's camera bag.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about many things.
Well, you can say it about audio engineers because we've all used gaffer tape as well.
There you go. It's a crossover. So when you do your audio podcast, dedicate it to him.
Oh, man.
The double dedication. Nice.
Wow.
So he
is, how about that?
Yeah, so that's, he died last week. So
yeah.
I think, they had to gaffer tape him into the coffin. They're going to be using this product somehow, you know. They have to gaffer tape the coffin together, then use nails. There's going to be a whole range of stuff that they must have done.
Yeah.
Can you imagine little bunches of flowers on top that's made out of gaffer tape? They could have had some real fun with that. I bet they didn't. They could have.
Party boobers.
You get like the red gaffer tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the different colours. You could do a bouquet of gaffer tape flowers.
Yeah.
Made out of all the different colours. That would have been pretty cool.
Yes.
Anyway. So, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, we'll cover the rest of your stuff, seeing as how we've started on your list. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess only that one, because a dedication needs to be at the beginning, not like.
Why does it?
Because that way, if he was listening, he'd be able to enjoy it all the way through that it was his
episode. He's not listening, Glenn. He's dead.
But I couldn't have got the George Georgiadis pun in early if we'd done it at the end. And then George would have got like 2 minutes of displeasure rather than the entire episode.
Right.
You think about it, you know, now he's gone, it could have been mine.
Right.
And it's not some guy with tape.
Glenn, tell me about the Bowens XMT500 flashhead.
What is it? Oh, I don't give a rat's ass about the Bowens XMT5 flashhead, quite frankly. But I'm very interested in the first word.
Bowens?
Yeah. Because they're back, baby. They died 2 years ago.
Oh, did they?
They were gone. Absolutely gone. Bankrupt. Gone, gone, Gomsky.
They've done a Kodak.
Well, kind of. They were acquired by some investment group in 2016, then
Aurelius,
died in 2017, yep. Yeah, then died in 2017. Well, now Godox are producing Bowens flash products.
Oh, so basically it's a Godox product with a Bowens badge on it.
Well, I think it's exclusively made for them. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. So Godox won't sell it themselves.
Or shaped the existing product with the new housing to look like something else. But it's going to be, I think it's going to be exclusive through Wex Photo Video in England.
Right.
So,
The article says B&H in the US will be selling them as well.
Well, there you go then. So it's back. So it's kind of good. I mean, a lot of third-party Flash stuff uses Bowen's mounts.
Yeah, and I was going to say a lot of people would have the all of the modifiers that have a Bowen's mount ring on them.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice that they're back. And we know Godox make excellent product, excellent constructed product. So it's better than having like the no-name lights that maybe going to fall apart on you.
Yep.
That you can actually go and buy a quality product that's going to survive. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Nice.
I didn't actually look at what the product was. I just saw the name.
Right.
Roger Sakala, who we've talked about a few times on a podcast. We have.
Okay.
It's a famous man in our industry. He owns a company called Lens Rentals.
Okay. Yep.
And he's the guy who pulls apart stuff and or does reports on how many times these lenses fall apart. His blog is one of the most interesting photographic blogs you can go to.
Right.
He's got information that no one else in the world has.
Does he bounce his lenses down the bus steps like you do?
Well, you know, he hasn't asked me to do that yet.
Right. Okay.
Officially. I'm just doing my own private research.
Right, okay.
As I saw my Godox AD200 flash go flying as the stand flew over today in the howling wind.
Are you kidding?
Around. But like I said, Godox build great stuff. It took a 12-foot drop, I'm going to say.
Wow.
Not a mark on it. Functioning perfectly, you know.
Nice.
But so he's been really famous for pulling things apart and everything else. Well, now they've made their first ever product.
Right.
They've made the world's widest fisheye lens.
Okay.
4.9 millimeter wide angle.
Yoy yoy yoy.
And it's so wide it can see behind itself. You don't. It's not like one of those super telephotos that's so powerful you can see the back of your head. It's not one of those.
Right, okay.
It's so wide that you can see slightly behind us. It's a, I think, was it 270-degree angle or something?
Wow.
And it's only $5,000.
Of course.
And weighs like 5 kilos or something.
Right. Okay.
But you can imagine there's some specialist use, but it could be handy for some people with some special projects, I'm sure.
Yeah, right.
But it's pretty cool that this company that started out just renting out camera gear, then became a resource for reliability and strength and construction. Now they're branching into finding some niche products they can do themselves. So I thought that's pretty cool.
Wow. It's a pretty trippy looking lens.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even Los Angeles Airport.
A long time ago.
Yeah, oh, do you remember that that UFO-shaped building that's out the front there?
No. Oh, I don't know if I ever saw that.
It's iconic, and there's been so many movies over the years, but it kind of looks like that.
Oh, okay.
That.
All I remember is the LAX letters.
Yes, the big letters. My mates from Tamron have announced the upcoming release of 3 new lenses.
I saw that yesterday.
So the big news, of course, the big exciting news for many folk is the new 17-28 for Sony.
Yep.
I saw that they released a lens. They had some post up on the internet last week or something. It might have been for the 17-35.
Right.
For the 35 for the Canon Nikon mount. And the Facebook and Instagram post, every single comment was Sony, 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 Sony,
yeah.
Sony. Everyone wanting Sony. So now to come out with the 17-28 is awesome. So I could only imagine at some stage this year they're gonna be doing the 70-210.
Right.
Then you've got 17-28, 28-75.
Yep.
Maybe it's going to be a 75-200. Who knows? But they'll complete the entire range for people who don't want to buy the genuine Sony stuff.
Yeah.
Now they've come out with the lens. I don't see the point of.
Right.
The 35 1.4.
Yep.
They've already got a 35mm 1.8.
Right.
Yeah. And from what I can tell, doesn't sell that many anyway. It's not like a massive volume product for them, but. And here's the big but. I'm led to believe on the quiet that this will be something exceptional.
The 35 1.4?
Yeah, the image quality is going to be something to behold.
Okay.
So that will be interesting to see. Yeah, I mean, because the 35 and 45 1.8s, the two that have got in that wide angle fixed, are pretty darn nice lenses and pretty darn sharp and pretty background blur.
Yeah.
But this 35 1.4 is going to be something pretty cool. I would love to see him come out with a 20mm lens.
Yeah, right.
Give me a fixed 20mm lens.
20mm prime.
Yeah, but anyway, that's that. But the one lens that I initially thought, that's a weird lens, is the 35-150.
Yeah, 2.8 to f4.
Yeah, 35 to – it's a weird focal length.
It is unusual.
It's a very weird focal length.
Because that's, what, around about 11 times?
No.
Roughly? No?
Where's your brain at, dude? Four?
Sorry. 70. Yeah. 35. Yeah, there you go.
Hello. Nurse.
Four and a bit.
Four and a bit.
Yeah.
Jinx. So it's an unusual focal length. It's not overly wide.
No.
Yeah. And it's 150s. Okay.
Not but overly long.
Then I had another epiphany. Mm. There's two this week. I'm going to see the doctor if it keeps up. I had another epiphany. Now, all of a sudden, my gear list for Africa just changed radically.
Right.
I'd been doing weight tests and all sorts of stuff, and I'd nailed it. Then I was doing the 17 to 35.
Yep.
The 70 to 210 and the 150 to 600.
Yeah.
And a 1.4 times converter.
Yeah.
And my goal was I was going to have on one camera the 150 to 600 and the other one the 70 to 210.
Yep.
But I wasn't happy because the 70-210, whilst a beautiful, fabulous lens, its widest is 70. Now, if something gets close,
yep,
like an elephant comes up near you,
yep,
you're not going to be doing much with the 70.
No.
So you're then going to be scrambling to try and get your 17 to 35 out,
yep,
and swapping over whilst all this stuff's going on.
Yep.
Enter the 35 to 150.
Yeah.
I'm now no longer taking the 70 to 210.
Right.
I just don't need it.
Yeah.
If I've got the 17 to 35 in the bag, the 35 to 150 on one camera, and the 150 to 600 on the other, got perfect crossover.
Yeah, totally.
But that's really cool. So that's cool. I haven't seen the weight on this, but it's going to save you a few grams as well.
Oh, it's not going to be uber heavy.
Yeah, and I'm going to think, I mean, I love my favorite focal range for shooting people is 120, 130 sort of range.
Yep.
So it's going to be a perfect portrait lens too.
Yeah.
So initially I was going, and I'm not sure how much general use I'll get out of it. It could take over. It could become my favorite walk-around lens. I don't know. But for Africa, definitely, bang, that's a lock and load straight away. So yeah. I was quite pleased. It's another little piece of the puzzle come together for me.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. And the last thing on my list, and you might have seen this yourself, and I haven't checked to see what other people have sent through, but this is a pretty important. The sailor in the classic VJ Day in Times Square photo has died.
Oh.
He died.
Right.
I didn't know he was still alive, so I'm not mourning. So don't relax.
Right.
But, there's not many iconic world photos that as soon as you see it, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
That's of everyday people.
Yep.
Rather than famous people that become iconic. And this is certainly an absolutely iconic photo of someone. I never even knew the person's name, but he died this week. So that's interesting little aside.
Yeah.
So they're the things that caught my eye this week.
Excellent.
What have you been up to?
Well, one thing that I saw this week was an article on lightstalking.com about a data breach which occurred to 500px.
Yeah.
Now, what I find a little bit weird about this story. Okay, I just need to break into the podcast here because as I was writing up the show notes, it occurred to me that the Light Stalking article may not have been 100% accurate. I went to 500px to check their official release announcement regarding this data breach, and it seems that the data breach actually refers to all accounts which were opened before July 5 of 2018. The Light Stalking article referred to accounts opened between July 5 of 2018 and February of 2019, but I think they might have got their information a little bit muddled up. So just to be clear, I'm posting both links in the show notes so that you, if you do want to check it out, you have all of the resources available to you. But 500px in their announcement said that they are resetting all passwords for accounts which were opened before July 5 of 2018 as a attempt to stem the damage of this data breach. All right, back to the podcast. 15 million new 500px accounts in a 7-month period?
Think about it. That
seems like a lot.
Sounds like bull twang. It sounds like the Russians or the Chinese have been setting up fake accounts and then got in and hacked themselves.
Well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe there's a lot of bots on 500px now. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they're inserting themselves and then stealing themselves from themselves. or the Chinese are going in and then the Russians are, well, what are you up to? And got to have a look.
Maybe that's what it is. Glenn, you're all across this tech, mate.
You know.
David Fulton wrote in and said, read the Petapixel article on Micro Four Thirds. Yes, it is a good system in a lot of conditions and good that a lightweight system exists. But the article is a variation of, I moved from soap powder brand A to brand B and I'm so happy with the switch. Heard often.
Yes.
I still have my Four Thirds lenses and use them with the Micro Four Thirds OMD EM1 body with an adapter, which is a few years old now, in addition to full frame. I'd like to see a new sensor for Micro Four Thirds before I spend again. Every system will whack you if you muck up. Some are a tad more forgiving with exposure and autofocus speed. Interesting podcast. Thanks, fellas.
Hang on a sec. Read that last line again, will you?
Interesting podcast. Thanks, yeah, fellas.
You know, we've had, I've got to say, 2019 is shaping up as quite the year. We've had several, and by several, I mean more than one compliment this year.
We have.
Yeah, that's nearly a compliment an episode.
Yeah. What's going on?
We should do a greatest hits compilation of compliments. A compliment compilation. That's not so easy to say. Yeah. And then we'll give it away complimentary.
Yeah, right.
Rather than charging like we do for the podcast.
Yeah.
Where's my check coming, by the way? You haven't sent me one yet.
It's in the mail, mate. Okay. Troy Casper sent us a story from Petapixel, how two photographers unknowingly shot the same millisecond in time.
Yes.
On March the 3rd, during a large East Coast winter storm, I headed to the ocean to capture some wave action, blah, 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 and these two guys have got supposedly the same image, but seriously, they must have been almost side by side because the angle is identical.
Yeah.
However, there was one comment that mentioned that I had stolen the image from another New England photographer, Eric Gendon, after letting the commenter know that it was indeed my image and that I possessed the original RAW file. I headed over to the other photographer's page and was blown away. We had what looked like the exact same image taken at the exact millisecond in time from what looked like the same exact location and perspective. So how did they...
Yeah, but see, the map of where they were both standing,
yeah,
they're reasonably far apart. They're, you know,
hard to tell
gauge-wise. But looking at a car, I'm going to say they're a couple of hundred feet apart.
So I'm guessing they were shooting with fairly long focal lengths for the images to look so close.
Yeah, and so the other guy's using an APS-C size sensor camera. He was using full frame, so they had to be a different... slightly different locations,
yeah.
and if you look again, there's like a little diagram showing really fine detail, like on the dome.
Oh,
of
yeah,
the
right.
A
wow.
Tiny bit more wave on one, a tiny little less wave on the other.
Yeah,
I mean it's astounding. It's astounding when you think about just how
seriously down to hundredths of seconds, isn't it?
Yeah, it's even finer than that, almost. Yeah, it's almost the exact same millisecond. Just from a tiny different angle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite understanding.
Yeah.
And they both own the copyright, which sort of shit beats over our friend Lisa Sard, doesn't it?
We will get to that. David Marland wrote in and said, hi, guys. I went to the Escher exhibition currently on at the Gashinal Gallery. Do you see that? That's nice. Like the National Gallery, but it's a bit different. The Gashinal Gallery of Victoria last weekend. Escher is the artist who is well known for his woodcuts and lithographs of pictures that play with perspective, with creatures morphing into other things, and of the famous two hands drawing each other. This exhibition has been developed in conjunction with the Japanese design house Nendo, which has helped the NGV, that would be the National Gallery of Victoria, stage this exhibition by making it amazingly interactive. For example, a row of four houses morphs into five houses that you walk through as you view the works. When first viewed, the space the houses are on looks like a series of steps, but it's not. Not as well known is Escher's early works, which were woodcuts based on his photography of places he visited on vacation. The exhibition and the book of the exhibition shows a few photographs and the final woodcuts that resulted. Considering each line had to be carved in different thicknesses, depths, and backwards, it really gives you an appreciation of his high degree of skill and the development of his later works. The Nendo staging really complements the exhibition and as a photographer, gives an extra appreciation for understanding perspective. For example, there's a room with apparently random angled rods that can be seen as a house from a particular vantage point. Yeah. The staging makes the exhibition both accessible and fun. Kids will enjoy it too. Here's the link. The exhibition goes until April the 7th. If he hasn't already seen it, I reckon Glyn would be in his element. Cheers, David.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get down to it since it opened, but just never got around to it.
I would love to see that, because I'm fascinated by the work of Escher. I think
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Way back in the dark annals of time, I was into Escher before I was into photography.
Yeah, same.
So, I used to have Escher pictures on my wall as a kid.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So, I'm definitely going to get down there. And there's another place down in Melbourne called Artvo.
Okay.
Which is a similar thing about perspectives, but it's basically things painted on the floors and the walls.
Oh, you took your girls to that a year or so back.
If you're standing exactly the right spot, it's all three-dimensional and looks like you're in the scene. So it's a similar kind of thing to the random poles.
Yeah.
And I'll look up this link, and we'll put this link in the podcast in a minute. There's the band OK Go. Have you ever heard the band OK Go? Yeah, yeah. They've got a video which is just astounding for one of their films. All the videos they've built are astounding, where the camera's moving around the scene. It's pretty much done all in one scene.
Yes.
But as it moves along, these elements come together to form solid objects and then disappear into nothing. It's astoundingly well done.
Yeah, all of their stuff is brilliant.
Yeah, if you don't know OK Go, I'm not a fan of the music, but I'm a big fan of the video clips. They do some amazing stuff. So incredibly creative.
I love the one they did in the Vomit Comet. The anti-gravity aeroplane. That was pretty cool.
So incredibly well done.
Yeah.
So definitely worth checking out too.
Cool.
Awesome.
Adam sent us a few stories. The first one was on DIY photography about Manfrotto's parent company, Vitech, acquires motion control company. I don't know if this is it SERP? Is it syrup? I don't know. SYRP.
If you're going to, it's like if you're going to name your kid something like that, be prepared for its entire life to be called the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So if you're going to call your company SYRP, deal with whatever we call it.
Yeah. What really surprised me, I'd never heard of the parent group, Vitech, and the number of brands that they own.
Yeah.
Like Manfrotto, Joby, Small HD, Teradek, Last Alight, Low Pro. Whole bunch of others. Yeah,
they bought all of it off from the Damon Group a couple of years ago. Ah, a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
So I used to do a bunch of stuff with the Damon Group.
Right.
So.
The next one from Adam, also on Petapixel. This guy shot 50,000 pictures to make an 81 megapixel photo of the moon. And this is just gorgeous. I briefly skimmed through the article. He basically shot with two different cameras. One was a ZWO. I don't know how you pronounce that. I'm assuming it's ZWO or ZWO. And the other was a Sony A7 II. And he basically took 50,000 images and then cherry picked for the very best images for each layer and composited together this whole image of the moon. And what's beautiful about it is that one half of the moon is in sunlight and one half of it is in shade, but he's been able to include enough detail in the shade side that you can still see, the shaded detail, which is great.
Pretty amazingly done.
That's awesome. Yeah. Add him to the list of people we don't like.
Yeah.
The next two stories that Adam sent us, we've already covered. One was on F-Stoppers about why you should never upload your images to Unsplash.
But you know that Adam doesn't listen to the podcast, so how would he know that?
That's right. And the other one, which we only covered a couple of weeks ago, these portraits were made by AI. None of these people exist. So I'll throw those links in the show notes just for anyone that missed them. But,
if you listen to the podcast, you know, he's a serial non-listener, that man. He really is. Yeah.
And the last one from Adam is Adobe confused as to what a Nikon looks like. Uses a Fuji XT20 to promote faster Nikon tethering. That's funny.
Amusing, isn't it?
Yes. Anyway,
that's when you farm stuff out to your design pattern department, and there's just
you let the work experience kids take over.
Love it. Nikon, I see our heritage through Nikon spectacle lenses. Wrong camera. Love it.
Yeah,
that's funny. That's too funny. That's it. Is that all we got?
No, well, we...
Oh, no, we should touch
on. We do need to address the ongoing
saga. Never-ending story.
I know. This just seems to get worse and worse and worse. The story...
What are we talking about?
The Lisa Sard debacle.
Lisa Sard, yes.
Now, I'm just on Facebook right now as I'm reading because I'm trying to find the post that Christopher Getz put up today, which had the letter from the AIPP.
I've got that here.
Right.
Okay, so the Australian Institute of Professional Photography has made a further determination on images submitted by Melbourne-based photographer Lisa Sard in the annual APA and State Print Awards, following the initial disqualification for her 2018 commercial photography entry last week. The added images are from the 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018 State and National Print Awards. Ms. Sard was given a further week to provide adequate evidence to support her entries, continued validity. The request for files were not made available by the nominated time. Not admitting guilt, she requested the images be withdrawn from the competition.
Wow.
Such an action automatically disqualifies the images and all respective awards. The matter was immediately referred to the AIP Compliance Committee, as foreshadowed in an earlier announcement. After an extraordinary meeting called last night, which they should have been doing before that anyway, the Compliance Committee made the following recommendations, which are accepted by the board. So, with immediate effect, Lisa Sard's membership of the Institute will cease indefinitely. All accumulated points, awards, titles, and prizes are rescinded. Ms. Sard will not be permitted to enter the future AIPP state or national awards. The Institute finds that there has been an ongoing breach of rules over a number of years, which have not only brought the AIP into disrepute through no fault of the AIPP, bullshit, you're just as bloody, not as guilty, but it's your own fault too.
Mm-hmm.
But more, that's not in the letter, that's me, just so you know.
Just to clarify.
But more importantly, adversely affecting all those who might otherwise have been announced as winners or awardees at the time. The AIPP is now going through the large number of categories and awards over the relevant years. It will soon announce revised winners in a number of state and national awards. The AIPP has the required judging records and point scores from the relevant awards events. To the best of its ability, AIPP will work to make good on the rightful winners and category entrants directly affected. The scale of the corrective action required means not all matters can be resolved or adjusted immediately. The IAPP has studied a sample of images judged by Ms. Sard in recent years and is satisfied that the remainder of the 5-member judging panel plus panel chair and assisting chair would have drawn similar outcomes after deducting her input. Due to the way the scoring system adjusts for any one of the 5 judges and chair surveillance. As a result, no changes to awards points for an individual picture of which Lisa Sard was a judge will be made. It should also be noted that judges are not able to question an image's validity in the awards after its acceptance. The acceptance relies on the entrant's firm agreement to rules. Judges have worked within those guidelines and there is no basis for some of the unjustified attacks on judges that have appeared in social media in recent days, which the AIPP deplores. The Institute has discussed whether there is a need for any changes to the rules. If someone agrees to the rules and acts in good faith, the rules remain effective and do not need changing. What will change in progressive steps is additional audit and review of processes of images using additional independent checks and technology. As some 70-plus awards globally have been involved across 6 different awards bodies, this is not an isolated just to Australia. This must be seen as an opportunity to further strengthen validity of entries for the benefit of the vast majority of honest and compliant photographers entering the photographic awards. John Swain's national prison.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is, as I said, the 70-plus awards globally across 6 different award bodies.
Yeah.
And pretty much all of those, there's another one from the Society of Photographers, has just taken away everything from her as well.
Wow.
Yesterday they banned her, took away all awards. But it said, yeah, there's prizes, there's prize money, there's all sorts of other implications that will never be really – I can't see how it can be redressed.
Yeah, well, I mean, the prize money issue is pretty major. I mean, I don't know if the AIPP is in a position to sue her for, I don't know what position she's in financially, what would happen to her if that was to happen. But again, you know, you sort of feel bad for all those people that missed out on a potential award because of this.
Absolutely. As it just keeps on giving, you know.
Yeah.
it's the biggest, well, certainly from an Australian perspective. I mean, there's been other big controversies over the years, but certainly from an Australian photographer's point of view, it's the biggest controversy I can remember.
Yeah, well, certainly the biggest controversy in the history of this podcast from an Australian point of view. I reached out on Facebook today to John Swainston, who you know, like Glenn, I've known him for years, long before he was the president of the AIPP. And I said, hey, John, look, I imagine you've got your plate full at the moment with this whole debacle, but are you willing to come on the podcast and have a chat, or is that a topic that you cannot discuss right now? He did reply to me and said, look, I can't talk about it right now. There are legal implications, but give it a couple of weeks and I might be able to, you know.
Well, that in itself is interesting, the legal implications. What does that mean?
Well, you know, maybe
they're pursuing legal action against her.
You could read that between the lines and come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
You know, because you would imagine, okay, if we were as litigious a society as America, which we're not, but if we were, it is conceivable that all of those people who won second and third prizes could launch a class action against the AIPP for not being diligent enough in their screening of entrants.
Yeah.
And, you know, the AIPP would then be forced to take suit against Lisa because, you know, they'd be trying to cover their own butts financially.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what's happening. I'm just saying that's an imaginary scenario that I've just concocted. Whether that will really happen or anything like that might happen, I don't know.
I think a key part of the AIP thing was her asking to have the award-winning entries taken, removed, not admitting any guilt whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just
withdrawing them.
I'm withdrawing them from that competition from 5 years ago sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just weird. I mean, because she's not mentioned, because she hasn't come out and said anything to anybody online. So there's been no, hey, I've done wrong. She may come out smelling like roses at the end of it. I'm still not necessarily saying, I mean, nothing looks good. And it definitely looks like she's entered incorrectly and everything else. But, yeah, she's still a talented artist. And artists by themselves are a weird mob. They do weird stuff. So
that's what makes artists artists.
Pretty much. I think it's part of the course, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
But to withdraw images, not seeing there's any guilt, could be part of the whole psyche of this is my art. I changed it significantly. It doesn't look like it did, therefore it's my art.
Yeah.
You know? Because I remember 15, 20 years ago, working for a company and they needed an image for something, so they just pull something off the internet.
Well, I said,
can't do that. And they said, if you alter it by more than 20%, we can.
Well, I was just thinking as you were saying that about altering of works, and it made me think of the whole Richard Prince thing.
Well, that's another matter.
You know?
He just takes photos of somebody else's and just some captions.
Yeah, all he does is add a caption and prints it on a different medium and, changes the aspect ratio and calls it his own work, you know? And so you kind of, I don't know, I'm still thinking this out, but it kind of makes you think, well, hang on, what's Lisa done that's so different to what he did? I mean, I guess the difference is he didn't enter any photography awards and claim that it was his own work.
No, he just put them in massive galleries and sold them for huge amounts of money.
Yes.
Who's the more evil?
absolutely. Can of worms.
That's why I want to keep to my mediocre photography and never be good enough to win any awards anyway, so I wanted to be put in this situation. So let's keep monitoring this as it goes along and see
for
what
sure.
other crud happens, I guess,
Absolutely.
I was talking to a photographer friend of mine on Friday, breakfast with her, lunch with her, Breakfast sounds like I slept the night.
Brunch.
I was having brunch with all the ladies from my school group. She's one of the photographers. Yeah. And she's saying it's like a car wreck, you know?
Yeah.
You don't look, but you kind of
can't look away.
Yeah. It's very much becoming that. So crazy.
All right, mate, so what's on for the rest of your week?
Well, naps tomorrow.
Excellent.
I'm looking at it, hopefully. There's a good chance. I've got nothing majorly planned. I've got to do a little bit of work on the website, but I'm sure I can nap before, during, and after that. And hopefully, right the balance of the week.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. So you enjoy that? Yourself.
You're doing a hard day's work?
I will be working hard tomorrow, yes. Then Saturday, Kat's got something on at lunchtime, and then we're heading up to the Hunter Valley Saturday night to see my mate Dave and his band play. And then Sunday will probably be a quiet day.
Lovely.
Yes.
Good stuff.
All right, mate. Have a
nice time. I will, and we'll talk to you next week.
Will do. Bye.
Bye. Before we go, I think I've already deleted it. What was the name of the episode that we were calling this?
Russell Howell,
same thing.
You claimed that he was so famous, and even you forgot his name.
I just want to say goodbye to him. thanks for listening, Russ. It's pretty lovely. Terrific.
Put the speaker cone up against the coffin.
Gaffer tape it on there.
That's it. There we go.
Awesome stuff. In fact, we should make the speaker cone out of gaffer tape.
There you go.
All right. Take care. Bye, everyone. See ya.
Shutters Inc. Another audiotu.com quality podcast. For questions, comments and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.